As soon as the WAG, with Ryan and Dean waving goodbye, had vanished from the outskirts of Glenwood Springs, JB had suggested that they should start looking for transport to follow up the southeasterly trail. But they quickly came across three problems. One was that parts of the ville, mainly along the frontage road, had suffered badly from an earthquake, and few of the buildings in that sector had more than a shell left, which cut down the options of locating a rig. Secondly, as the weather had deteriorated, becoming colder, with a short flurry of snow, all of the wild horses and mules that had been feeding quietly on the lower pastures around the ville had chosen to kick up their heels and trek west out of town, moving parallel to the Colorado River, the ruined railway, and the buckled interstate. But the third unexpected problem was far more dangerous to the five companions. They'd split up to facilitate the search, and Christy and Doc had paired up, moving along the side roads, past what looked like a park. Doc pointed with the tip of his sword stick at a rusted wrought iron sign that had toppled sideways, but was held up by a spreading fig tree. It read, Rio Rancho Barbecue, Eats and Livery Stable.
That might perchance be worth a little investigation.
Sounds a better bet than Ma's place, Doc.
There was an overgrown entrance drive between two rows of fallen picket fencing. The pavement was broken up and covered in weeds, though it still showed occasional smudges of white paint where cars had been parked. The front of the building was designed to look like a 19th century ranch, constructed from pitched logs with deep-set windows and rifle slits. But as Christy and Doc drew nearer to the entrance, they could see that this was all a crude facade, and that behind the exterior was a single-story concrete building in poor repair. The doorway gaped like an unfilled tooth, and the row of shattered windows stared like blinded eyes.
Some outbuildings around back. Barn with its roof still in place.
There were some peculiar shapes in what had to have been the back garden, mostly buried in yellow flowering creeper and poison ivy, which Christy finally realized were just the rotting relics of plastic picnic tables and chairs. A bank of dark purple chem clouds somewhere north of Glenwood Springs threatened a serious storm.
Long way off.
I do most fondly hope so. I would not like to think of Ryan and the poor dear lad caught out in the open in inclement weather. I shall not feel totally happy until this year has crawled by and we are reunited once more with Master Dean.
I'll feel happy when we meet up with Ryan again.
Christy ran her fingers through her fiery hair, feeling the tightness of the curls.
Up by fair play. One of the things that amazed me when I was trawled back to the days just before pre-dark was the way that snowy, remote Colorado had become infinitely fashionable Colorado. Little hamlets that one passed through like Vale, becoming the abode of the briefly rich and famous.
They were only a few paces from the barn. Christy held up a hand, silently drawing her Model 640 Smith & Wesson Double Action 38. Doc raised an eyebrow, pulling out his own Lamar, thumbing back the scattergun hammer.
What?
Someone in there. I can feel it. Someone frightened.
Mayhap I should go on ahead and attempt to seek out this person while you wait here, Christy?
I don't think so, Doc. Come on out, whoever you are. We won't hurt you. We're coming in. If we do, then someone might get themselves chilled.
Don't!
I got a feeling I know who's hiding in there. Come out, child!
A young girl emerged into the daylight, blinking, her hands held up in front of her as though she feared a blow. There was a deep bruise on her face.
By the three Kennedys! The serving girl from Ma's place! Did you guess that it was she, Christy? Quite amazing!
Don't shoot me like you shot Ma!
We won't.
The little face had sharp, foxy eyes and a pinched mouth.
They don't know you shot Ma, folks here. They think she died in the fire. Me too. They'd get real nasty if they know truth.
You impudent little minx.
You can hit me, but that don't hurt. Been hit by Ma, then you've been hit by the best. But there is a way to stop me going and telling everyone in the ville that you butchered poor Ma.
And that's doubtless a handful of Jack, is it?
Could be. And you better be nice to me, you old fart.
What?
Or you get to dance on air from the hanging tree by the river. Yeah, you better be real nice. Maria say kiss my feet. And you better get on your belly and do like I say.
Doc's knuckles were white on the silver lion's head hilt. Christy was barely keeping her iron self-control, glancing casually around the garden to make sure that they weren't being watched by anyone.
You know what Ryan would do if he was here, don't you?
And for once, I believe he might be right.
What are you talking about? You don't whisper secrets or else!
Can you do it, Doc?
In cold blood? Or even when I'm angered as I am now? I fear that I could not.
Maybe I can.
Christy drew her gun and pointed it at Maria.
Don't make a sound or you get to go meet Ma again. Understand, child?
Sure.
Turn around, quickly.
You'll shoot me in back of the neck.
Turn around and lift your hair off your nape. Do it!
What's a nape?
The back of your neck.
Maria did as she was told, standing in front of Christy, looking toward the barn, her body trembling. Christy brought up the .38 and pointed it at the back of the girl's skull. She reversed the gun.
Well done. I admit that I had thought you were about to...
No, Doc. There's things that Ryan and I are real close about, and there's things where there's a chasm between us.
That won't hold her for long.
We could tie her up. No. Do it properly and she'd likely die. Might deserve that, but... Tie her loose and we might as well leave her free.
Talking's time, Christy.
You're right. Have to abandon any idea of finding transport. Meet the others as quick as possible and head out of town on the same trail as Ryan.
On foot?
Have to be. Take what food we got. It's going to be a tough hike, Doc.
What will be, my dear. If it's to be done, when 'tis done, 'twere well it were done quickly. Let us rejoin the others.
In less than 30 minutes, they were all together, walking fast out on Old 82, following the route taken by Ryan and Dean. Jack had been all for going back and quietly strangling Maria, unable to believe that Christy and Doc had spared her.
Shit, don't you learn anything?
Life is precious, Jack.
Our lives. She come around quick and get mob after us, be a lot more dead than one girl. Real stupid, both of you.
By late afternoon, Jack had calmed somewhat as he led the way south and east. He climbed a spur of rock to peer back down the track behind them.
Nobody coming. No posse pursuit. Maybe hit her hard enough to put on the last train to the coast.
There were a number of marmots, almost as large as domestic dogs, popping up out of burrows as the five friends strode along. Jack produced a knife.
Got it. Yeah, at least we got meat.
Evening came softly, almost unnoticed. One moment they had been walking at a steady rate up a steep section of the trail, with woods close in around them. Only a couple of minutes later, so it seemed, twilight had come and gone, and they needed to stop for the night. Jack and JB had collected plenty of wood for a good fire, and they cooked the butchered meat.
I wonder how far ahead of us Ryan and Dean are.
Jack pointed ahead, and a little to the left.
Thought I saw a pinprick of fire. Could be damn.
They all stared into the clinging blackness, but could see nothing moving. Christy found it vaguely reassuring to know that they were at least on the same stretch of trail. The first two mules began to plummet over the edge. The whack twisted and flexed and bent, the weight of the mules pulling it over, the sheer edge of the steep drop.
Dad!
Ryan felt the world go into slow motion. He was hanging on with his left hand to the top of the piano, saving himself from plunging over the wrong side of the rig. He could see the taut cord that had caught his son's ankle, trapping it between the piano and the back of the seat, where Lemuel's corpse was slumped sideways. The problem was that his pongo was sheathed on the left side of his hip, and he was holding the Sig Sauer in his right hand. There was no way that he could holster the gun and draw the panga without going over the edge. He steadied the automatic. The first shot frayed the cord and embedded itself in the wagon bed. The cord snapped.
Dean, jump!
Dean flew out the safe side. With a desperate acrobatic twist and lunge, Ryan hurled himself off the tailgate. Ryan fumbled for the Sig Sauer and stood. He saw that Dean was already on his feet, gripping his own gun. Joey wasn't moving. Crushed to death by the iron wag wheels, thick clots of dark blood oozed from his open mouth. The bandit that Ryan had shot in the chest was also dead, lying spread-eagled in the rutted dirt. one hand clawed shut on a fistful of barren dust. That left the one survivor. Trapped beneath his dead horse, the one-armed man had stopped wriggling, staring up as Ryan approached. His revolver had vanished, and his elegant sombrero had become trampled and bloodied.
Let me go, mister. I can't do you no harm. I just went along with the others.
Friend of mine always said, you die with the company you keep. Shame about the horses. We could have been a good spell on our way to the school well before dark.
We leaving the bodies here, Dad?
I guess so. We could heave them down the ravine after Lemuel and the piano. Not much point, though. Leave it all like it is. JB and Jack should be able to read what's gone down here. They'll see our tracks heading southward, clear as day.
Wow, that was a triple bright light, Dad. Shooting out the rope that got my leg caught was... well, that was the greatest. I thought for a minute that we was all done for. But you were so cool and in control. You knew we'd be all right.
You should learn to say, we were done for, not was done for, Dean.
Ryan didn't reveal to his son his terror that they had all been going remorselessly to hell with an upright piano.
Let's move, son.
It was only when they were forced to resort to walking that they realized how fast they'd been going with the mule team. Dean knelt by a tiny stream that dashed its way across the tracks.
How long have we gone?
Dean kept his hands to drink from the icy clearness.
Since the ambush?
Yeah.
Ryan checked his chron.
An hour. Wow. Call it about an hour 20.
That all?
Sure is. After you with the water.
The boy wiped his mouth on his sleeve and straightened, allowing his father to take his place by the bubbling stream.
Seems longer. If I look back down the trail where it bends in that sharp sort of fork, I can still see the dead horses and men.
Dean moved to the unmarked edge of the trail and stared down.
And I can still spot the broke-up wagon mules. Doesn't seem very far away from us.
Mildred has an old pre-dark saying about how time passes quickly when you're having a good time. I guess the downside of that's true as well.
Ryan got up, and the two of them started walking down the trail again. The weather was changeable, and as they came around a snake-back turn in the trail, there was a drop in the temperature, and the sky grew darker. They didn't see another living soul, but they did find mute evidence that Joey and his two desperados had been working their business a little higher up the trail. There, lying at the side of the trail, was a dead donkey and the bodies of an old man and a girl, barely into her teens. It was only when they drew near enough to peer more closely at the girl that they could be certain of her sex. The man, who they presumed was probably her grandfather, lay huddled on his side, a small black hole just in front of his ear, the silver hair scorched by a powder burn. His clothes were in disarray, all of his pockets turned inside out. Someone had slit the girl's throat, and it was obvious from the bruises and congealed blood around her mouth and between her thighs that she had been brutally used before being slaughtered. Her face was turned to the sky, her eyes wide open, as though she were absorbed with the sudden change in weather. As hail began to fall, Dean noticed that the hailstones were striking into the girl's staring eyes. He winced. Looking around, he saw a kerchief that had been ripped from the old man's pockets. He picked it up, unfolded it, and placed it over the girl's face.
We can't bury him, can we, Dad? Of course, we got no spades, nothing to dig with.
When Ryan turned away from the bodies, he noticed a new hardness to Dean's face, as though the experience had aged him. The two of them continued wordlessly down the path until only a few minutes of daylight remained. Ryan spotted a small, neat sign set in concrete off to the left of the Leadville Trail.
Nicholas Brody School, 12 miles.
We make it tonight?
No way, Dean. This part of the Rockies got grizzly and wolf running wild, as well as cougars. And it used to be a breeding ground for muties back in my warwag days. Nah, we'll find somewhere for the night. Start fresh in the morning. That way we'll both make a better impression.
There was a gas station on the same side of the road as the sign for the school. The pumps were long gone, hacked off their squat bases for the scrap metal content, and the cash office had all its windows smashed. but it still retained its flat concrete roof, stained by nearly 100 years of Rocky Mountain winters, and all four walls. Dean had difficulty falling asleep. He was working over in his mind the fact that this was probably the last night he'd spend with his father for at least a year. But finally, sleep came. He was in a schoolroom. There were rows of desks, but no other pupils, and a blackboard covered in arcane squiggles that made no sense at all to him. In front of the board, a teacher sat at his desk. A bunch of columbines sat on the desk, and a stuffed lark stood on a shelf behind his head. The teacher was elderly, his clothes disheveled. He had white hair and had cut himself shaving, with dried blood mottling his chin. The teacher stood and pointed at a 4-foot box that lay across his desk. As Dean drew nearer, he was aware of the smell of corruption, and he stopped.
Come along, son. You want to learn, don't you?
So my father will be proud of me. Yeah, I do.
Then come, and we'll carry on with the biology lesson.
The teacher picked up a metal pointer with a needle-sharp silver end.
Come closer, and you can see just what I'm doing.
Dean was close enough to see that the box had its lid open, but not quite close enough to make out what it contained.
Let me point out to you the main features of the human anatomy.
Now Dean could see what was in the box. The body of a beautiful girl, about 13 years old, with long blonde curls. The teacher jabbed the dead face with the metal pointer.
Here is her nose and her mouth for scenting and eating. And these were for seeing.
The teacher placed the pointer on one eye and pushed it inward.
No, don't do that, you cruel bastard! Don't!
Dean!
Ryan held his son tightly.
It's okay, Dean. Just a nightmare. It's all right.